Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this very special Masters Preview Edition of the Back 9 Report, presented to you by eDraft.com. We come live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader, but as you know, it's Majors time. It's the Masters, and we have to bring in reinforcements, and we have our European guru, colleague from eDraft, Kieran Clark. Welcome, Kieran, again to the show. How are you today?
Thanks, Carlos. I'm very well. I'm very excited about the Masters tournament. Obviously, it's always the highlight of this time of year, every single year, but this year, there's so many great stories and plots coming together just at the right time. So many guys playing well. Tiger's back. Rory's going for the Grand Slam. Jordan Spieth there. Bubba Watson trying to defend again. There's so much going on. I'm really, really excited about this Masters.
And we are pumped up. And Fred Alvader, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, Kieran, I'm exactly the same. Every year, it's this whole deal. It's Masters Week. I get started building up the week before. I can't even hardly watch the Houston tournament because I'm looking ahead to the Masters every year. I'm excited to have Kieran here with us tonight. And, guys, there's nothing I would rather be doing than talking golf and the Masters with both of you tonight. Let's go!
Let's go, and let's start right away with a weekend backspin. We are going to share with you our thoughts on the weekend, and I just want to mention the two biggest tournaments in the schedule. We have to start with the LPGA and the final there, the playoff between Brittany Lindstrom and Stacey Lewis for the A&A Inspiration, the first major. So Brittany Lindstrom, I really thought Stacey had it there, but that bogey, oh my God, it cost her. And finally, at the end, you know, Brittany really came through, and now she's the early Rolex Annika Major Award leader. So great congratulations to her. And also, there was a massive playoff. J.B. Holmes overcame Johnson Wagner, and Jordan Spieth, who I thought also was going to win almost again. But, hey, J.B. Holmes, great to see him back again winning. So, hey, Kieran, what's your thoughts on the weekend?
Well, I must say, I watched the A&A Inspiration event, and I enjoyed it. You know, Brittany Lindstrom, back in 2009 when she won that event for the first time, she eagled the 72nd hole to win the tournament, a really unique feat in a major championship. Then, 6 years down the line, to do it again, this time to get into the playoff with Stacey Lewis was a tremendous moment and a real great drama, and it thrilled the galleries that were there. And then the playoff, the thing about the playoff was, you know, with the nature of that 18th hole, which isn't the greatest hole in the world, it became, in the end, a wedge contest, 110 yards and in, and that gets a bit tedious after a while. Then, of course, Stacey Lewis had the bit of hard luck with the bad lie. But Brittany, you know, her attitude was fantastic, as it always is, a very positive character on the golf course, a real talented player, and that she thoroughly deserved to win that. You know, the beagle the last hole was just tremendous. And on the PGA Tour, you said there about the playoff, that was really entertaining as well. Three guys there. Johnson Wagner, who really has a big week for him. He was only has a conditional status in the PGA Tour with a sponsored invitation for Houston. He came in there, shot 87 the week before with his father in really bad health at the moment, and he almost won the tournament. A great story there. His career's back on track. And GB Holmes, the guy has played brilliantly for 2 months now, and he deserved to get that victory. He's certainly been due one because his form over the past 8 weeks has been tremendous. 2 second places, and to get a win there was well deserved. And obviously Jordan Spieth playing well going into Augusta.
And Fred, hey, we talked about what Kieran was referring to, that we said it could come. And we also mentioned to Jeff Minor when we were talking to him about Brittany Lindstrom 2009 doing that. And she made it again. That 18 hole became into play for that LPGA, the A&A Inspiration. So what's your thought on that tournament and the weekend backspin?
Playoffs? Playoffs? we had playoffs this weekend, guys. Stacey Lewis could not make the birdie she needed on the par 5 72nd hole. at the Annie Inspiration on Sunday to claim her third major. But Brittany Lynchcomb, she made the eagle to get it to 9-under par to Ty Lewis, and then she went on to win in the four-hole playoff. You know, but the biggest story that neither one of you touched on was the 73 that Lydia Ko shot on Saturday. It was her first
It was her first
over par round, her last 29. She was tied with Annika Sorenstam for the record and failed to get it to 30 on Saturday. It did appear that the pressure buildup did get her a little bit and, you know, kind of prove that she is a little bit human, Carlos. There was a Phil Mickelson sighting at the Houston Open also last weekend. After being among the leaders after 36 holes on Friday, he faded to 75-71, ended up T-17 on the weekend. Just can't put four rounds together. J.B. Holmes got his second win of the year. But the sight of Jordan Spieth ramming in his par putt on the 72nd hole to get into the playoff was spectacular. That's exactly why I watch golf. That was so well done. It was so cool. The 20-year-old now is up to number 4 in the world, number 2 in the FedEx Cup. Last 2 months, he's only gone, he had one missed cut, but he's had 6 top 10s in 8 starts, a couple of runner-ups in there. Spieth has gone, runner-up in the last 3 starts. So do either one of you not think he will be a factor at Augusta this week? I'm sure we're going to talk about that in a little bit, Carlos.
We will, so don't spoil it. Don't spoil it. And, Jordan Spieth, wow, massive. And that miscut, I think he had something to do on the weekend, so that's why he missed it. There has to be that reason. And for Phil Mickelson, I think he hit the wrong fade. He faded from the field instead of hitting it.
Wrong one.
Hey, yeah. Kieran, let's go for the Par 5 news, sponsored by United Golf Network. And there was Big Bus yesterday. There's a survey that you're going to talk to us about because it was surprising. I think that Bubba Watson might be asking for a recount after this one. So tell us all about it.
Yes, Carlos, you're right there. Yesterday, this had a lot of traction, this article from ESPN. They conducted an anonymous survey of 103 PGA Tour players, 21 of whom are major champions. And ESPN asked the players and their thoughts on a whole variety of topics. From the trivial to the more interesting to the unimportant. And it's something they've tried to put together for a few months now, and the results were released yesterday, and some of them were certainly more interesting than others. And so going into this week in the Masters, of the 103 who were asked, only 28 think that Rory McIlroy is going to win the Masters this week and complete the career Grand Slam. Now, perhaps the other guys are already in the field and they want to talk up their own chances, and that's fair enough. But 28, I think that's quite a low number. But only 28 guys think Rory's going to win the Masters this week. And Tiger Woods is obviously back this week. And the question was, will Tiger finish his career with 14 majors, where he's been now for 7 years, since the 2008 US Open? And 64, the majority, thought that Tiger will finish with 14 major championships, and that's not particularly groundbreaking given what we've seen from Tiger in the past year or so, and particularly in the past few months. You know, he looks very unlikely to ever win a major championship again, although we'll talk about that later going into this week. And on to, I think, a more interesting topic. We've seen a lot in the past about Dustin Johnson recently in his, can we call it a leave of absence from the PGA Tour, and the PGA Tour has a policy of not announcing publicly their fines and their suspensions, and it's quite a ludicrous policy in my view. And it seems that the majority of players feel the same way. 59 of the players asked thought that the PGA Tour should announce the fines and the suspensions they put on their players. And I think that transparency would be a very welcome thing to the PGA Tour and would be, you know, would be positive for the game overall. And now on to what you referenced there, Carlos, about Bubba Watson. And Bubba was asked about this today at Augusta National. And indeed, the players were asked in the survey, you know, which player on the tour would you be least likely to go and help in a fist fight? And the answer, the majority of players, Bubba Watson came out on top. So we can take from that he is the least popular player on the PGA Tour. And, you know, again, that's not particularly surprising. You know, anyone who is, kind of follows the game and reads between the lines would probably see that and understand that themselves. However, My issue with that was, I think it's a bit of an unnecessary question. It's kind of high school standard question. That's sort of what people do at the end of high school, where they criticize each other anonymously in a poll, a survey. But Robert Watson, he said today he's going to try and become a better man. So perhaps in 2 years' time, when do the survey again, maybe he will not be on that list. And incidentally, the second person who appears to be least likely to help in a fist fight was Patrick Reed. And again, that's no surprise either. I'm saying that Patrick Reed probably could fight for himself in a fist fight, I think, anyway, particularly when he's pumped up on a golf course. And the last question I thought was interesting was about drug testing with marijuana. And marijuana is now has been legalized in a number of states in the U.S., and 40 players on the PGA...
Is it legal in Scotland yet, Kieran?
I don't know. I'm honest, I don't know. I'm a good clean living man, Fred. I have no idea. I don't know.
He wouldn't know. He wouldn't know.
You got all that scotch.
I don't get the impression that I might do that. Science, but I don't.
You got all that single malt over there. You don't need to smoke.
Well, that's true. I stick to tea and coffee. Caffeine does it for me. But yeah. But yes, 40 players, back on track here, 40 players believe that the tour should stop testing for marijuana. So read into that whatever you may want. And so 40 players, and you know what, I actually agree with them. Because in the end, marijuana is any more dangerous or than alcohol or anything like that, then probably not. So I suppose if it's legal in some states, then perhaps the PGA Tour should revise their policy on that. Now, anyway, back to the overall question of this article was it ethical? Was it really a good piece of journalism? Well, you know, I'm all for hearing some of the behind-the-scenes stories in the PGA Tour and the gossip and the intrigue and all that sort of thing. But, you know, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm old-fashioned. But I'm not sure this is a particularly healthy format to kind of have. And I'm certainly not a fan of the Bubba Watson question. I think that's completely unnecessary. However, it's quite interesting. Some of the answers were quite interesting, the marijuana and the fines and suspensions. But overall, the article was not particularly interesting. So perhaps next time, ask some better questions to these guys. But anyway, Fred, over in California, where I think, isn't marijuana legal in California yet? I'm not sure. But anyway, they have a drought.
Absolutely.
Anyway, Fred, don't they?
Why do you think they're in such a pickle out there? They're all high. Hey, Kieran, before we leave that, Bubba said today, he said, I take it as I need to improve as a man. I need to get better, and I think over my career since my rookie season now, I've gotten better. But obviously, there's more room for me to improve as a man. So,
a big room.
There's a lot of room.
He said that before, though, Fred.
Yeah, I know. Hey, guys, the current drought really is kind of a serious thing. It hit California, started in 2011, and it really has reached severe proportions in the state. And Governor Jerry Brown was forced to implement mandatory water use restrictions for the first time in the state's history. Governor Brown said in a press conference, "We're in a new era. The idea of your nice little green grass getting lots of water every day, that's going to be a thing of the past." Brown is the new catchword out there. California produces a high percentage of food and commodities consumed by the rest of the country. Thus, agriculture is a primary industry in the state. In addition, 39 people reside in the state, and that means they need a lot of water every day just to live. That's a lot of toilet flushing, guys. Governor Brown did stop short of recommending everyone shower with a friend or two. I'm just saying the situation, you know, demands drastic measures, you know. For years, the southern portion of California has depended on water from the snow melt in the mountains to the north. As it moves southwards, it's caught in reservoirs for usage on farms, lawns, and golf courses. California golf courses already have systems in place to limit water usage. The average golf course in California uses less than a half of an Olympic-sized swimming pool every day. I know that seems like a lot, but on a whole golf course on, you know, 100 or 100, 200 acres, that's not a lot of water. The average, they will have to cut that number even more to comply with the mandated water use levels allowable. The two severe problem areas are the rich farming valleys around the state and the Palm Springs area. You know, Palm Springs really is a desert, so, you know, it's dry anyhow, but now when we've had this severe drought, it's even worse. 3 years of drought have drained the below-ground aquifers and underground lakes that are used to water crops. Palm Springs is, like I said, built on a desert, but they have large underground lakes that they use to keep the courses green and the water flowing. Just prior to the ANA Inspiration last week, which was held there in Palm Springs, the temperatures were in the high 90s every day. They had not received any precipitation for some time. Locals were citing the lack of snow on the mountaintops that surrounded Palm Springs area and noted that was a bad sign for the summer months ahead. So this is a huge problem, not only for California, but because of the huge percentage of food that is produced for the rest of the country, it becomes a big problem for everyone. So, guys, I'm going to chip in. I'm going to do my part. I'm going to cut back on avocados, lettuce, and grapes, but I ain't cutting back on golf. Carlos, we're up to you, buddy.
Hey, I just hope – I'm going to talk about China in a little bit, but I just hope they don't look at China and make that excuse to start cutting golf courses. So, anyway, hey, let's talk about Jordan Spieth. He's the man of the hour and the man of the time right now, and it's a great thing he's starting to get his endorsements, and now he's getting on TV. You know, he's starring in his first TV commercial, but – he won't be pitching a product, and that's good. Let me tell you why. It's for AT&T, a spot that will support the company's It Can Wait campaign against texting and driving. That according to Doug Ferguson of the Associated Press. That spot with Spieth is expected to debut tomorrow during the Masters Par 3 tournament on ESPN, and then will slide into the rotation. AT&T is among three global sponsors at the Masters, allowing it to air advertisements during limited commercial space. The ad is more like a 30-second documentary, much of it shot at Augusta National when he was playing a practice round earlier last month. His hitting shots, putting and walking across the Hogan Bridge. He's also seen arriving at an airport, in his hotel room, and in a coffee shop with his phone always in his hand. Spieth said he had to work hard at not texting and driving when he got first his license, and he has read plenty of tragic stories about accidents from texting and while driving, though not from anyone he knows personally. What Spieth said was he liked about the commercial was how it captured a day in his life when he's on the road. It was intriguing because it draws people into my personal life, what I'm doing day in and day out. I can draw an audience in, but it's something universal. We're hearing more and more stories about teens ignoring the dangers and adults setting a bad example. It needs to change direction. So I totally agree with him. This is a great campaign. It can wait. Hey, don't text and drive, okay? It's very, very dangerous, and it's great that a figure like Spieth, who's getting so much traffic, so much attention right now, and he's just on the rise, is taking this on the hand. So this is the first time that AT&T will be using Spieth in a creative space since signing him to an endorsement deal last May, and hopefully it will be the first of many for him, so congratulations to him. Hey, Kieran, I think you have some news to us from some commitments to the WGC Match Play and the Scottish Open.
I certainly do, Carlos. And I must quickly say that when I finally grow up, I want to be Jordan Spieth. He's quite a guy, isn't he? He's a remarkable young man. Yes.
Would we all like to be that?
Yeah. I want to be Jordan Spieth. Can we be Jordan Spieth for a day, please? Oh,
really?
Jordan Spieth and then Miguel Angel Jimenez the next day. 2 days. One is Jordan, one is Miguel. That would be a perfect weekend, wouldn't it?
That would be paradise.
It would be paradise. But, yeah, anyway, commitments. Yeah.
I kind of already am like Miguel Angel, though. You don't know me that well. So, I that's kind of my everyday way of living. So.
Well, Fred, I must admit, I've never quite envisaged you having a ponytail. But I can, yeah, if you have one, I believe you. I'll take your word for it.
At least I speak Spanish, okay? So.
Carlos is the closest we have to Miguel. There we go.
Mi bueno, mi amigos.
Anyway, I've got to get going here with my section here. Yeah. Commitments.
Go ahead.
We're doing a show here, gentlemen. Come on, get back on track. Let's stick to the schedule here. This is serious business. But anyway, yes, the revamped World Golf Championship play is only a few weeks away now. It's played at the end of this month and is always a really anticipated event. And the event has received a boost with the confirmation that the world's top three ranked players will all compete at Harding Park in San Francisco. Rory McIlroy, Henrik Stenson, and Bubba Watson. And McIlroy was run up to Hunter Mahan 3 years ago when the event was down at Dove Mountain, while Stenson won the event in 2007 in Arizona. And, of course, the event, as well as a new venue, it'll also have a new format this year, removing the what I thought was compelling knockout first round, which wasn't very appealing to TV stations, naturally, given the fact that you could lose all the big-name players on the first day. And it will be replaced with a pool section, a pool play, with 16 groups of four players playing round-robin matches against each other, similar to what European Tour does in their World Match Play Championship. And these matches will be played Wednesday through Friday, and the winners of each group will advance to a single elimination bracket on the weekend, with a round of 16 being played on the Saturday. So Rory, Stenson and Watson are all going to be there. It should be a fantastic event. Match play is something we don't see much of in the PGA Tour these days, so it would be great to have a different format and something to watch, something unique, which is always really appealing. And yes, as well as the match play, later in the year, just before the Open Championship at the Old Course, St Andrews, which is, coincidentally, now a mere 100 days away. The grandstands are going up now at St Andrews, and I'm going to be there next week having a look around, and it's looking very impressive right now. But the week before that, the Scottish Open looks once again like being the marquee event, one of the marquee events on the European Tour in the lead-up to golf's oldest major championship. Matt Kuchar and Luke Donald have both confirmed that they will participate in the event at the truly wonderful Gullin Golf Club in East Lothian, which sits adjacent to the Open Championship venue of Muirfield. And Luke Donald is a former champion of the Scottish Open at Castle Stewart a few years ago, while Kuchar has been inspired to play in the event by watching the exploits of Phil Mickelson, who, of course, won the Scottish Open at Castle Stewart, then followed it up a week later by winning the Open Championship at Muirfield 2 years ago. Mickelson himself is widely expected to also enter the event in the lead-up to the Open Championship, as is a certain Rory McIlroy before he defends his Open crown at the Home of Golf. So this year's Scottish Open looks like being a real pleasing appetizer before the Open kicks off at St Andrews in July. I'm really excited about that event. 2 weeks there are going to be absolutely fantastic. And Carlos, I believe you have something about China. What's going on in China, Carlos?
I don't like what's going on in China. I really have to talk to Chinese President Xi Jinping, because he's overseeing a crackdown on banquets, gift-giving, and other official excesses that ultimately includes the closure of 66 illegal, supposedly, right, golf courses, and around 100 more in the country are expected to be shut down over the next few months. What's wrong with him? I don't know if they legalized marijuana there and he's smoking it, but, you know, the golf courses were targeted because they are closely associated with wealth and Western elites. According to the agents of France Press, a ban on the target golf courses has existed for 10 years, but the ministry just now took action to close them. A March 30 announcement posted by China's Ministry of Land and Resources said, and I quote, "Presently, local governments have shut down a number of illegally built golf courses, and preliminary results have been achieved in cleanup and rectification work." You know, the central government issued a ban on new golf courses back in 2004 to what they were saying was to protect arable land and water resources. Most existing golf courses were built since then. The growth has been from fewer than 200 to more than 600 right now, and that mostly because local officials continue to allow course development because of the money it brought to their communities. These local officials even offered tax breaks for operators of new courses in places such as the tropical island of Hainan. In plain English, folks, the owners could not have gotten the permits to build the courses if they did not bribe local officials. That's what they're saying. Moreover, government officials joined clubs associated with the new courses, but they did so under false names. The goal was to enjoy golf without giving off an air of opulence. The National reports that news of the closure of those 66 courses was followed by reports that senior official Wang Xingyang was being investigated for playing golf in breach of Mr. Xi's 8 rules on official behavior. Last year, the Chinese government anti-graft commission announced that provincial communist officials would face punishment for joining a golf club or taking a part in certain golf-related activities. A telephone hotline was set up so the Chinese people could report any suspected golf offenses. my God, Frank, this is a shame. And let me tell you, on a serious note, the golfing industry in China has been severely impacted by this, because what we have thought and we have been talking about in the show as the big next source of talent and golf development for the world definitely has taken a dent and has been put on hold indefinitely, Fred.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I mean, you know, they've got the new Chinese tour starting over there, and you know, they've got tournaments going on, and they're bringing tourists in by the plane load, just, you know, thousands of them, and they've got that is so stupid. But oh well. Hey, let's talk a little bit about, I don't know if you've seen, you know, you talk about Jordan Spieth being in some new ads, but I don't know if you've seen the two new 30-second ad spots that KPMG will use featuring Stacey Lewis and Phil Mickelson. This is the first time a PGA Tour player and an LPGA Tour member have been featured in the same commercial like that, unless it was just a public service announcement or something. But I've never been a big Phil fan, but I have to say I do appreciate his doing this with Lewis. She is the best American women's player right now, former player of the year, two-time major winner, and along with Lydia Ko is pretty much the face of the LPGA. Even though Phil has not been winning, he is still one of the most popular players on tour. Just by his mere presence in the advertisement with Lewis brings credibility and eyes to the LPGA Tour. The glass ceiling ad shows Lewis teeing off and breaking a glass ceiling that is over a corporate board of directors table. Mickelson gives her the honor to hit the first shot and breaks the glass. You know, the ad is really very well thought out and planned. It really is good stuff. You know, and as we have discussed, the LPGA has just made fantastic strides over the past 3 years, and with the emergence of Stacey Lewis, Lexi Thompson, Lydia Ko, as well as the reemergence of Michelle Wee, corporate sponsors are lining up to use the LPGA to promote their brands. Michael Wan just got a new contract with the LPGA, and he knows the importance not only of larger purses for the women's tour, but more endorsement dollars for his players. Big-name professional golfers make several times more money in their careers from endorsements than they ever do on the golf course. So these new ads by KPMG are part of an effort to promote the inaugural KPMG Women's PGA Championship, as well as the KPMG Women's Leadership Summit, both of which will take place the week of June 9th at the Westchester Country Club in Rye, New York. You know, the KPMG Women's PGA Championship will include the second largest purse in women's golf, $3.5 million. The U.S. Women's Open Championship offers the largest purse at $4 million. And then on another note, we mentioned it real briefly last week, but for more details, Stacey Lewis, KPMG is joining Stacey Lewis to host an AJGA event for junior golfers. They're going to host the KPMG Stacey Lewis Junior Open. It will be held at Bella Vista Village in Highlands Golf Course in Bella Vista, Arkansas on July 2nd through the 5th. Will feature 132 of the top junior golfers, boys and girls, ages 12 through 18. Lewis came to the KPMG family in March. She played in 8 AJG events during her junior years, with her best finish coming in 2002. Lewis is quoted, "Junior golf is the foundation upon which the best players in the United States have built their games. It is where I developed a passion for the game, where I was able to escape from my ongoing battle with scoliosis, and where I was able to earn a college scholarship. It is an honor that KPMG and the AJGA, two organizations that are the best in their respective fields, have agreed to join with me in this effort to provide the best opportunities in junior golf to an area of the country that means so much to me." Guys, that wraps up the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn some money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashwood, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available through United Golf Network with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, it offers every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is membership to My Golf in U.S., which offers discounted golf rounds in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, For Sale for Owner allows you to sell used or new equipment on through their internet. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And remember, very important, it has been created by entrepreneurs to give golfers the opportunity to play golf, make money, and enjoy life. I love that. Hey, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we have the massive, best, and most entertaining. If you haven't had fun so far, hey, wait for what's coming. It's the Masters Preview. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now we're at the practice range where every week we take a topic and we give it our own thoughts, our own points of view towards it. But this week, it has to be. There's nothing else. It's a tradition unlike any other. It's the Masters, the first major of the year that brings the tour and the world to Augusta National Golf Club. In the previous 78 editions, the golfing world has been treated to dramatic back nine closers, clinical finishing and play of pins and needles on the hallowed grounds of the former Footland Nursery. You know, this is very important because the Masters is the most popular golf tournament in the world for a variety of reasons. One, it's played on the same green grass year in and year out, so patrons and television viewers worldwide know exactly what is happening where it's played. There's a period of remembering holes or learning the course during the week. It's an indulgence of the familiar, and what an indulgence it is, you know. The reason the Masters is widely popular and revered is because the tournament needs to be won, not par to death. The axiom of the Masters doesn't really begin until the back nine on Sunday, was by design. Bobby Jones was one of the belief that fortune favors the bold and scoring chances coming home are plentiful. So is danger and tough decisions. The combination makes for fantastic theater, and any player within five shots of the lead coming down the stretch is hardly out of it. You know, the other interesting angle is these scores can happen on Sunday where scoring coming home is encouraged. The course usually is set up to reward good shots so on the roars of the backside can be heard, but let's not misconstrue this drama to say this course or tournament is easy. Last year, Augusta National was the second most difficult course on tour as it's played almost two shots over par. 2 years ago, it was the most difficult par 72 on tour, so it's hardly a pushover. So, you know, and one thing is very clear to me. Every year, we are really raving about it. Why? Why is it? You know, I'm going to take now, before I pass it on to Kieran, I'm going to go David Letterman style. I'm going to give you a countdown of 13 reasons that you know the Masters is coming if, you know, dry cleaners start seeing an uptick in seersucker. Number 12, players know exactly who's ranked 50th in the world, and most importantly, who's 51st. Number 11, every half-decent round is seen as momentum for Augusta. Number 10, Augusta area homeowners put their finishing touches on April vacations they'll take while renting out their homes. Number 9, speculation runs rampant on what Bubba will serve at the Champions dinner. Number 8, first-time invitees have already shown up so often that they're on a first-name basis. Rory McIlroy, number 7. Rory McIlroy settles any lingering litigation quickly so that he can focus on his preparation for the Masters. Number 6, the Master Media Guide lands on with a thump at your doorstep. That happened to Fred. Number five, you can now see the Masters on the same page of the PGAtour.com schedule page. Number four, you start reflexively humming the Masters jingle in the shower. I think Kieran does that. Number three, you start devising excuses for sick days during the first full week of April. That happens to me. Number two, people start using hello friends, both sarcastically and as an actual
friend. Hello friends.
Hello friends. And the number one is the demand for pimentos skyrocket. So, hey, Kieran, how about the tradition? Unlike
well played, sir. Well played.
Well, I must say, Carlos, quickly on the assertion that I hum that tune in the shower, guilty as charged. And I didn't do it in July last year. I do it every single week, so I can't get the Masters out of my head. But you're right there in all the things you say, and even before there. There's something about the Masters that is so special for so many different reasons. One, quite simply, its place in the schedule. It's the first major of the year. We've had to wait 8 months since we've had a major championship, so we're all kind of we're excited about that naturally. So that place in the schedule gives it that real like grandeur in that respect. And also, you know, the golf course, there's, as you say, the real familiarity to it. And that allows the viewer and the fans who attend there in person to develop a real personal affiliation with the golf course. You know, we have seen, we know how the putts break, we know how the holes play, we know what's coming next. It's like watching your favorite film over and over again, but the ending changes sometimes. And it's interesting. And we know what to expect in a way. But the Masters has this sort of magical side to it where we actually always expect to see something different, something new. And obviously there's so many traditions to the event that are familiar. The green jacket is iconic, the par 3 contest, all these little things come together, the honorary starters on Thursday morning hitting the first tee shots. All these little things come together to make the Masters that little bit special. I would always say that the Open Championship is golf's greatest championship. It is the oldest championship. It's the one that's the most international championship. However, the Masters is unquestionably golf's best event. You know, it's able to draw in the viewers and entertain us in so many ways. But, of course, it has to be said, there have been some duds down the years. Let's not kid ourselves about that. Certainly in more recent years when the golf course has become so long at times and they've kind of got the balancing correct with the scoring and the difficulty. But generally speaking, the Masters, the golf course, Ben Crenshaw, in his press conference today about ahead of his last Masters appearance, he spoke about the golf course being, you know, it invites you to be aggressive, and you always have to be aggressive to win the tournament. You can't sort of defend on the way. And, you know, I know Bubba did it last year, but generally speaking, you can't really defend to win the Masters. You have to go out there and attack the golf course. And that, in its way, leads to, you know, great stretches when we see Jack Nicklaus coming back in 1986 to win the back nine. And we also see disasters like Greg Norman in 1996, where, you know, the golf course can be so cruel. It rewards great shots, but it punishes poor ones. And it's a real emotional golf course for these guys to play, because they have to keep their emotions in check, but also have to express themselves as players at times and pick their timing to go for the shots and go for the aggressive play. So the Masters have so many great qualities, and the first major of the year, there's so many great players playing well, and it just, you know, the anticipation is as high as I've seen the Masters for quite a few years now, I've got to say.
So Fred, hey, how about this? You know, it's as the patrons and invitees there prepare to make their way down Magnolia Lane, golf fans across the world eagerly await the Masters weekend. How about you? You've been there before.
Well, you know, guys, to me, it's like going to church. You know, it's truly a religious experience. It's just quite a place. But the anticipation, you know, both of you touched on that. You know, the last major's in August. You know, if you got a Ryder Cup or a President's Cup in the fall, you've got from the end of September, you know, clear around here to April, you know, to get to the next major. So that builds. The fact that it's on the same course every year, it's a course that people have come to love, Augusta National, and then the beauty on television with the azaleas, the dogwoods, and all the other exotic flowers that fill up your TV screens. You know, it's just beautiful. And then the traditions and the history of the place. And, you know, Nelson and Sarah's, the Nelson Bridge and the Sarah's Bridge, Ray's Creek, Amen Corner, the Crow's Nest, you know, all the cabins, the Butler Cabin, the Eisenhower Tree that they lost last year. But Eisenhower, you know, probably their most famous member other than Bobby Jones. You know, when the first time we were there and we were walking around, there's a bunch of guys clumped around pointing and looking at something in the trees. And my wife said, what are they doing? And, you know, they're all in hushed tones and talking excited. And they were pointing to the Mickelson plaque on number 13 in the pine straw between where he hit it between the trees onto the green. And, you know, she just, oh, my God, you know. But that's, I mean, you know, a true golf fan, you know, that's what they're doing there, you know. The honorary starters, you know, that they used to have and with Sarrazin and Snead and Nelson, and now, you know, they have Nicklaus and Palmer and Player. You know, you have stretches. You had stretches through the years where from 1949 to 1954, there were six Masters. Either Ben Hogan or Sam Snead won all those except for Jimmy Dumerit, who's no slouch himself, won 1 year. And then you have stretches also like we had a stretch when Palmer, Nicklaus, or Player won for like 5 or 6 years in a row. And you've got other guys who can't win. You know, they want to win in the worst way. You know, Greg Norman couldn't get it done. He faltered a couple times. You know, you mentioned, you know, never won was Tom Weisskopf. You know, had great chances. He's runner-up 4 times. Johnny Miller. Ernie Els has been runner-up a couple times. So it's just, you know, they want to win this thing so bad. And to see them try and work hard down at the end, it's just, you know, it's really good drama, great theater, and it produces tremendous golf. And I'm going to leave you with this quote. We've got you know, they ask Fuzzy Zeller what he thought of the Masters. He said, you know, he said, I will probably never make it to heaven, but you know, being in Augusta National is probably as near as I'm going to get. So it means a lot to the players. It means a lot to the fans, and it's great stuff every year.
And it's a tradition, and really that's what all the players respect, all the golf fans do. And we have to start talking about the players. And there's a tradition also called Tiger Woods. And I think that, you know, a lot of the buzz that has been is not only Tiger, it's Rory and all the players, but also that the former number one in the world, Tiger Woods, has said that he worked his ass off to get himself ready for this year's Masters, has to say something. You know, that's how he summed it up. It's incredible. You know, when he was asked how he prepared for his comeback at the Masters, he said, I worked my ass off. That's the easiest way to kind of describe it. I worked hard. Well, he better, because he's going to face a lot of hungry players there and very good playing at their best. You know, one important thing to mention is that he will play in the Masters Par 3 contest tomorrow, and his two children, Sam and Charlie, will act as his caddies. He has generally avoided the relaxed eve of the tournament contest, the winner of which has famously never gone on to win the Masters that same week, so I think he's going to bogey all of the holes. So anyway, Woods is now ranked 111 in the world, yet he's adamant he's focused on winning the Masters for a fifth time. He arrived early to Augusta this year. So, I mean, all those things, he seems gentler and all that, but I don't know. I think that he's there maybe just for show, because for what we have read on the reports, he certainly doesn't seem like he's on top shape. So what do you think, Karen?
Well, I think with Tiger, you know, when he announced last week he was going to play a practice round at Augusta National on last Wednesday, then he went back last Friday. At that point, we kind of accepted that he was going to play, because if he hadn't played, having been to Augusta twice, that would have been a real damning admission about the state of his game, to miss the Masters when he's not actually injured. And now he's here. He turned up yesterday. He was extremely relaxed. He was hugging guys in the range. You know, he was doing everything. He was looking really. He was joking with people. He played with Marco Mira, his old friend, and playing the par 3 tomorrow with his kids there. I think that's a fantastic thing for Tiger, and you know, good on him. By all accounts, he's a fantastic dad, so that's tremendous for his children to experience that with him. You know, Tiger's been quite relaxed. And yesterday, he played quite well. Apparently, in the 9 holes he played in the practice round, and he apparently shot almost 30 unofficially on the front nine at Augusta. Obviously, the practice round, and you can draw conclusions from that or not. But I think the Tiger, look at where he was a couple of months ago in Phoenix. He looked like a man lost. His game, psychologically, he just looked lost in the golf course. And for someone who was arguably the best player to have ever played the game and one of the most assured competitors of all time in any sport, in fact, to see him in that state was sad. You know, I don't care if you like Tiger Woods or not. You know, it was sad to watch. And 8 weeks down the line, no matter how hard he has worked, and he may be the most talented player of all time, but I don't think in that state, in that period of time, he can get his game from where it was 8 weeks ago to where it has to be this week in order to compete with the likes of Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Bubba Watson, Dustin Johnson. Those guys are so far ahead of him right now in so many aspects, I can't see Tiger contending. However, if Tiger can play this week and he enjoys it and he makes the cut and he actually looks like a golfer again, he plays golf shots, he actually looks more comfortable on a golf course, more assured. If he can come away from the week, you know, playing four rounds, playing decently, looking more assured, then I think it's a positive thing for Tiger. But, you know, to have him in the Masters is obviously a fantastic thing. And I contrast 2 years ago, he obviously missed last year due to injury, but 2 years ago, Tiger left the 2013 Masters under a cloud above him. You know, that was the infamous drop on the 15th, the controversy that came from that. You know, should he have withdrawn? Was it a real mix-up from Augusta National and the Rules Committee? All sorts of allegations going on. And he returned to Augusta National there on Monday in the public eye, and he almost was a complete opposite to that. He came in there with a real positive intent, kind of eradicating those memories from 2 years ago. I don't think Tiger will win. I don't think he'll contend. But you know what? I think he'll make the cut. And you know, if you asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have said no chance. But I feel that Tiger will actually, you know, he knows the golf course so well. If he plays all right and he putts well and he's chipping is better than what it has been, I know it's the ultimate test in terms of your short game Augusta National, but Tiger has such a will as a competitor and as a player, and I think that will still count for something. And I think Tiger will do okay this week. Not great, but I think he'll do okay.
That was a lot of ifs there.
I know. That's from Carlos. You know, there are so many questions. Tiger Woods right now is a walking question mark. We don't know what to expect. I don't think even he knows what to expect, and that's what makes him so compelling. You know, whether we, you know, Tiger playing well, Tiger playing bad, we don't know right now. And that's, you know, I don't care what anyone says, Tiger Woods playing well or bad or whatever, he is still such a compelling nature, a compelling force in golf. And it'll be fascinating to see how he performs on Thursday. I'm really interested to see how he gets on.
Fred, I think he has a suntan because he said he worked from sun up to sundown, so his suntan must be very good. So what do you think about other than that?
Well, you know, I want to think that he's going to do well because, as we said, you know, last week, I don't want to see that guy that's, you know, like we saw out on the West Coast. I don't want to see that Tiger Woods. I want to see something more like we're used to seeing. You know, how will he play? Don't know. Tell you better after you know, a few holes on Thursday. What does it mean that he's here? Well, you know, he wants to win majors in the worst way. If he thinks there's some way he can scrape it around and be in contention and possibly steal one, he's going to do it because he's 39 and 40's rapidly approaching, and not many guys win too many majors after the age of 40. It can be done, but, you know, they're few and far between. And I said on another show last week that, you know, Augusta National is a young man's golf course. It is very, very hilly there. To walk that golf course, hit those shots off those side hill, downhill lies, it's a tough walk. You know, you play a couple practice rounds and you play for 4 days solid. It's very demanding physically. So, you know, was it a good idea to play this week? Don't know. We'll find out. Short game questions, that's what everybody's looking for. You know, is he going to be able to chip a little bit? Which I tend to think, you know, he can take care of that. You know, he may miss a chip here and there, but, you know, if he practiced that, I'm sure that came back. I mean, he was a great chipper before, so there's no reason to think he can't do it again. The bigger concern for me, Carlos, is his back and his health walking up down those hills for several days. So, to me, If he made the cut this week, that would be a very positive sign going forward. I don't see him contending, but, you know, it's Tiger Woods, so don't rule it out. But, you know, this whole new, kinder, gentler Tiger Woods playing a par three with his kids, which he hasn't played forever, hugging everybody and, you know, just who is this guy? I don't even know who this guy is that we're watching at Augusta this week. So, you know, everything's out the window with Tiger right now for me.
Well, he already, you know, you ask not to see the same Tiger that you saw on the West Coast. So nobody has seen this one before. So
no, that's for sure.
He's already, you know, giving you something to think about that. But anyway, let's move on to somebody who, when he was 9 years old, he sent a letter to Tiger Woods and said to him, "Hey, I'm coming to get you." And that's the world's number one, Rory McIlroy, who for months deflected all concern from others about the spotlight hovering above him heading into the start of the Masters this Thursday. You know, the lawsuit, his preparation, the enormity of trying to complete the career Grand Slam among the azaleas and pine trees. And there has to be also in the back of his mind the way that this is he's going for his third consecutive major championship, which means that he has to keep alive the streak for a Rory Slam. So, you know, it's a lot of things he has also in his mind that he has to justify his status as the pre-tournament favorite, all potentially colliding to send him crashing down, maybe, down the leaderboard this week. But, you know, he really hasn't been playing that good coming into the tournament. And even though that when Tiger Woods announced that he was going to return to the game, like we had just mentioned, all the spotlight turned to Tiger, and spotlight or not, you know, McIlroy just want to put his bag in the hollow ground and swing away come first round tee at 10:41 a.m. Eastern time. And, Fred, one thing he said, that the Masters is the only tournament in the world that gets him to be, you know, scared with that first tee shot. So how about Rory McIlroy's chances of winning his career Grand Slam and keeping the chances alive to winning a Rory Slam?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing that nobody's talking about. You're talking about the career Grand Slam, but this would be his third major in a row, and if he would close out this one and get the Open, you know, he'd have a Rory Slam like the Tiger Slam. So four in a row, that's pretty heady stuff. But, yeah, you know, Tiger's actually deflecting some of the press from Rory. You know, Rory can fly just a little bit under the radar because – so much attention is being given to Tiger this week, so I'm sure that's probably kind of helping him a little bit. You know, the bigger story for me is that he just has not played that well over the last month or so. He finished out the year so strong last year. He started out the year good in the Middle East on the European Tour, but, you know, he's number 151 in the FedEx Cup. He missed the cut at the Honda. He had a T9 at the WGC Cadillac and a T11 at the Arnold Palmer. So, you know, maybe he's kind of trending in the right direction, but, you know, that's kind of surprising to me. The good news is that his high draws work really well at Augusta National. If he can get the ball, you know, in the places on the greens where he can have some putts at it, you know, Augusta is a place he can do well without his A game. So, I really look for Rory to be a contender, and I was going to say this till later in the show, but I posted today, I want to see Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy in the final group on Sunday, and right ahead of them I want Bubba Watson and Patrick Reed, and about four or five groups ahead of them I want Dustin Johnson going on a birdie barrage and trying to catch them. That's what I'm praying for Sunday afternoon, guys.
Wow. Man, you should have asked for a yacht, a couple million dollars, something like that. It's easier. It's easier. Hey, Kieran, you know, of all his enormous talents, immense length of the tee, beautiful natural draw, and soft hands on around the greens, his ability to seize the moment also rests with his uncanny capacity to provoke a motion or distraction outside the gallery ropes for Rory. But one thing that we were talking about before this, the show, the start of the show, is that it's pouring rain at Augusta National Golf Club. And this is only the first of what is expected to be many rainstorms at this week's Masters. And that has lots of people thinking that Rory McIlroy is going to win. What about you? What do you think about his participation this year?
Well, the weather forecast will not harm his chances, that's for sure. You know, we've seen Rory in the past, and he won at Congressional in 2011 in the US Open. And then when he won last year at Royal Liverpool, the golf courses were very soft. Even Kiala Island back in 2012 was quite soft as well. So Rory tends to play well when courses are soft. But, of course, Augusta National, they can control the moisture and the greens of the sub-air system they have. They have some control over the elements as such. However, the rain will certainly soften the golf course. The greens are apparently quite soft anyway this week. Adam Scott mentioned that yesterday. But Rory, the thing for Rory, and I think Fred's right there, Tiger's inclusion in the field is a big thing for Rory. It takes the spotlight off him a little bit. You can kind of go in a little bit under the radar as such. But the pressure is still there. I think mostly internal more than anything else. I think Rory's very determined this week, and he's fully determined to win the Masters. Obviously, he came so close 4 years ago. That character-building collapse that he had around the turn in 2011, that really was he called it the most important day of his career. So it comes full circle then. He learned the cruelty of major championship golf 4 years ago. Then 4 years later, come back and complete the Grand Slam would be, you know, kind of a poetic ending, I guess, to that amazing achievement. However, I think for Rory, the biggest thing for him is, you look at his record in the Masters, he always seems to have one bad round. In each of the last five Masters, he's only played in six. The last five ones, he's always had a round of 77 or worse, one round, and that's completely killed his chances. The other rounds have been pretty good. He certainly can play the golf course very well, but he has this one round that kills him every time. So he has to turn that 77 into a 72. A mediocre round cannot be over par or significantly over par. You can't come back from that. You can't shoot 77 and win the Masters. I know Curtis Strange almost did it a number of years ago, but you can't really do that. And some people would say that's perhaps an indication that Rory's very aggressive and Augusta National can lull players into attacking pins that they really shouldn't do and you can fall into that trap. But Rory interestingly said today in his press conference when challenged about that was it was the opposite. He's actually quite tentative at times. He didn't attack the golf course when he should do. He showed the golf course too much respect. He was, in a way, intimidated by Augusta National. So Rory's game plan, he has to be smart the way he plays, but you look at Rory McIlroy. He is the best player in the world. No one can really dispute that. But is he the best player on this golf course? I would say that's probably Bubba Watson. But you know, Rory, if Rory plays well, I think Rory will win this because I think he is the best player. And if the best player plays well, then the best player, presumably, will probably win. But can he handle the pressure, and can he avoid, crucially, that really bad round? If he can put four solid rounds together, he'll certainly be in the mix come Sunday. But whether he wins or not, I don't know. But ultimately, if he does, it would be a massive story for two reasons. One, obviously, the career Grand Slam. It would make him arguably the greatest sportsman to ever come from the United Kingdom. And obviously, it would put him on one leg closer to that Rory Slam. And increase the anticipation for Chambers Bay and the US Open even further. So, Rory, I think Rory will contend this week. I'm not sure if he'll win, but I think he'll be a factor come Sunday.
Oh, he'll be a factor. I think there's a lot of scrutiny going on him. And like we mentioned, you know, he's going for three in a row, the career Grand Slam, even though he's been able to deflect all this attention and all that before, previously. And there's going to be soft grounds, which he loves. I don't think that he's going to win. But we'll see.
Can I make one quick point, Carlson Rory?
Sure.
He talks about players who are right to left having a real advantage in Augusta National. The left-handers, obviously, they hit power fades, and that seems to work really well for them. But Rory has a tendency. His miss is a hook to the left, a real sharp hook. And Augusta National is actually, even though it's a right-to-left course as such, hitting the ball way left is extremely damaging. Most of the trouble, look at holes like 13 is on the left, 11 on the left, even holes at number 5, you hit the miss the ball left, this is the fairway left, you're in big trouble, no shot. Number 10 as well, which Rory found out in 2011. So if Rory can, you know, minimise his bad shots and play to his game plan and play well, then I think he's got a very good chance. But can he avoid that really bad run that's killed him every single year? That's going to be the key question.
We'll see. More questions. Man, this is full of question marks. I love
so
it.
So many questions.
So many. We'll have the answers this weekend. Fred, How about this? You have some news for us from Arnie and Steve Stricker, Ben Crenshaw, some of the veterans. What's going on?
Yeah, Arnie has been announced that he won't play in the par three. You know, it's been kind of tradition lately that he and Jack and Gary Player play in the par three on Wednesday afternoon because he's recovering from dislocated shoulder. He was actually going to the tape a segment, and he tripped over the carpet and fell and hurt his shoulder a couple of months ago. And so he's still not back to full speed, but he will join Nicklaus and Player on the first tee on Thursday morning for the honorary first tee shots. You've got Steve Stricker is back playing this week. It's the first we've seen him play this year. He recently went down to Naples, Florida. He tested his swing and his strength. He had surgery 2 days before Christmas on a bulging disc in his lower back that was causing recurring hip problems. I was playing, walking, just to see what I had. It's the first time I played since December, and it was good. It felt good. Just a little stiffness here and there. I walked the last 3 days just to play like I would be playing. The last time he played was December 7th at the Hero World Challenge. So we haven't seen Stricker for a while. Ernie Els, can he win one of these things? Man, you know, he wants to win the Masters in the worst way. He's got those couple Open Championships. He's got one Open Championship. He's got a couple U.S. Opens, and he would love to add a Masters to his resume. And, you know, yeah, kind of a melancholy thing. We got Ben Crenshaw playing in his last Masters. You know, everybody loves Ben Crenshaw and his wins in 1984 and then this last one in 1995, which was on the heels of the death of his longtime teacher, Harvey Penick. You know, it's just legendary stuff, along with his longtime caddy, Carl Jackson. There had been a great book written about their relationship and that tournament in 1995 when he won. So there's some other stuff going on in the Masters this week. It's just not all Rory and Tiger and, you know, all that good stuff. There is some other drama and some other storylines going on also, guys.
Hey, Jack won six, and he won it pretty old once, too, so it can be done, but not everybody's Jack. So how about it, Kieran? How about the veterans' chances this week?
Well, you know, I would love to see Ernie Els win the Masters. You know, such a great player, and if any player really was damaged by the Tiger era, it was Ernie Els. You know, he finished second to Tiger a number of occasions in major championships back at the turn of the millennium, and he's also came close in the Masters a couple of times. 2004 stands out with that great epic duel with Phil Mickelson, and Mickelson hold that putt in the last hole, a famous putt, and Els was in the clubhouse waiting for it. And but Ernie, I don't think he's playing well enough right now. And people say his putting is bad, and putting is an issue, but you look at his stats this year, his long game hasn't been very good either. His greens and regulation stats are really poor, he's not hitting a lot of fairways, and nowadays, even though Augusta National is still a relatively wide golf course off the tee, you have to drive the ball well there now, and it's obviously a huge second-shot golf course. So Ernie Els, I think Ernie could still contend in an Open Championship. I think perhaps it's in Angers this year, or even the Troon next year we won before. He could contend there, but I think Ernie's days of winning the Masters, having a realistic chance of winning the Masters, are gone, unfortunately. And on Ben Crenshaw, you know, Ben Crenshaw is a wonderful story, and all the thing about Ben Crenshaw is, for me, he's the golf fan who got in as such. He's a golf fan who has the talent to actually achieve his dreams. You know, he's a great historian of the game, a great lover of the game, has a real rich fascination, and he's deeply embedded within the lore of Augusta National. And, you know, he's been there since 1972 now, 44 consecutive Masters tournaments. And, you know, he can't play the golf course now. That's quite obvious. His game isn't there anymore. The golf course is too long for him. And it will be a kind of a bittersweet moment, I think, when he bows out of the tournament on Friday, most likely, because I can't see him making the cut. But you know, he's had so many great moments there down the years, winning twice in 84 and 95, winning the low amateurs back in 72 and 73, and coming close on other occasions as well. 95 also stands out as being that, you know, how he won that week was unbelievable. And, you know, even if you're not a spiritual person, if you, even the most non-spiritual person would, I think, for a second or two, have to check themselves after the 95 Masters, because that was it made you believe in fate for a few minutes there at least. And but for Crenshaw, I know he's a universally loved gentleman, and along with Carl Jackson, who remarkably, and Carl Jackson has carried in every Masters apart from one since 1961. Carl Jackson will carry in 54 Masters tournaments, which is absolutely extraordinary. So those two men there have combined for 98 Masters appearances together. They've had 39 years together, and you know, a lifetime of memories that they've had. And I'm sure they'll come back to the tournament in years in future. But certainly, when they take that final walk up the 18th in front of the patrons there at Augusta National, there will not be a dry eye on the property, and I'm pretty sure in a few people's homes there'll be a few wet eyes as well, because Ben Crenshaw has had a real affiliation with the tournament, and you know, it'll be sad to see him go, but you know, it's a celebration as well for a great life at the Masters.
Hey, you know, old guys can do it. Miguel Angel Jimenez, who's 50, was fourth, and Bernard Langer, who's 56, was T8 last year, so they can do it. It can be done. So hopefully we can see him at least contending. But let's talk now. It's time to start talking about who's going to win, actually, this tournament. You know, it's Bubba, the defending champion. His game is certainly proven that this is fit for him. His style is fit for Augusta. He's won it twice in the past 3 years. There's also something very interesting about, you know, experience being important. You know, only Fossey Seller in 1979 has won his maiden voyage. Of course, that besides Horton Smith and Gene Sarazen in the first two years, but since then nobody else has won it, you know. And there's that Fossey Seller stat going on, you know. But hey, you know, Jordan Spieth made it close. You know, there has been some others also making it close. But one very important thing is they haven't won, so the Fossey Seller statistic is still on. So experience apparently pays off. So who would you think is going to win this year? Also, talking about the Europeans, you know, there was a special time, especially in the 80s and 90s, when the Green Jacket racked up air miles in galore as it repeatedly flew the Concorde back across the Atlantic. You know, Seve blazed the trail and won it twice. Bernard Langer, Nick Faldo, and hey, Sandy Lyle, Kieran, he got in the act in 88, you know, and the Masters Committee even found a green jacket small enough for Ian Woosnam. Hey, Kieran, Ian Woosnam in 1991. Of course, Jose Maria Olazabal also won it. So the Europeans had won the Masters 11 times in a golden 20-year period, but none since then. What's going on? Can they win? Fred, who are your picks to win, and what's your comment about experience, you know, the youngsters, the first-timers, and the Europeans? How about this?
Well, first of all, when you talked about your veterans, you failed to mention Freddie Couples, which he seems to turn back the clock when he comes up the lane there. You know, he seems to lose 15 years of age somehow, and even though he's not a great putter, he seems to do pretty well around that place. So I don't think Freddie can win it again, but, you know, just like you say, Longer, Miguel Angel, and, you know, Freddie, they do pretty well there, it seems, year in and year. I mean, they finish up in the top 15, so, you know, who knows? Moving on, though, to favorites for this year, you know, I think they got Jordan Spieth's jacket ready to go. I'm sure they got that one lined up. You know, Bubba, can he win it back-to-back? Yes, he certainly can, especially if it's going to be soft there. Because of his length, he just plays a completely different golf course than everybody else does. Adam Scott won it 2 years ago. Can he slip back in there? He's been kind of playing under the radar. He's going back to the longer putter this week. Been trying the short putter for the last three tournaments. Not too comfortable with it. He's not going to try that at Augusta. Jimmy Walker. Is it time for Jimmy Walker to win a major? The guy's just playing as good as anybody in the world over the last year and a half. And also another top guy, Patrick Reed. Say what you will, the guy's a competitor. You know, if he can make some putts, he hits the ball, you know, he hits that draw. His game is made for Augusta National. And then you got a couple guys that you know, Jason Day, when he's healthy, he's always right in there. And then you got Dustin Johnson, who's having a phenomenal year. Since coming back, he's just been playing at a tremendously high level. And again, a soft golf course, he is probably the only guy that can stay with Bubba for length. Rory's pretty long, but I think Bubba and DJ are probably a little bit longer than Rory even. So I think your winner is going to come probably, well, besides Rory, but Spieth, Bubba, Adam Scott, Jimmy Walker, Patrick Reed, Day, and Dustin Johnson and Rory. Those your winner's probably going to come from that group. The Euros, Kieran, you got Ian Poulter, Luke Donald, Lee Westwood, Justin Rolls. Henrik Stenson is a guy, he's long enough probably that could do it. Does he putt good enough? Maybe. Sergio, Sergio's game travels. We know that. Will the little voice in his head allow him to win? And the other guy, the guy that's not been playing very good this year, GMAC, you know, there for a while he was right there all the time, but we haven't seen much of GMAC lately. Evidently, the restaurant business and being married and having a family takes a toll on your golf game. So, who do I like? I like Spieth. If I got to pick one guy, I'm going with Jordan all the way. But I really like Jimmy Walker this week. I really like Patrick Reed, Day, and DJ. So I'm going to shut up and let you guys talk.
Let me. I'm going to throw away my paper. He picked my guy.
I covered him. I got him covered for you.
Yeah. Well, what am I going to say now, man?
I think Fred picked everyone in the field there, apart from Ben Crenshaw and Ian Wisdom.
Sandy playing this year?
Yeah, Sandy can hit the ball quite a long way still, so he's got a chance.
He missed a couple of names, just a couple. He said, I'm going to leave it there, but when we come back, he's going to, you know, go over the rest of the list still.
Well, that's the thing about this tournament, guys. I mean, it's a smaller field. And then you've got a lot of amateurs, and then you've got some guys that just, there's no way in hell they're going to win. So you eliminate another third, probably 30% of the field. So now there's only 100 guys or whatever, so now you're down to only about 60 or 65 guys with a real chance to win. And of those, probably, it's only going to be a group of 15 or 20 that really have a chance to win this thing. And that's why the Masters has the top names at the top of the leaderboard every year, because there's such a disparity between those guys and the rest of the field the way they make up their field.
Kieran, he minimized it to 67, so it's okay. He didn't pick them all. Okay, he minimized it to 67. So, how about you?
Well, I'll look at Europeans firstly, and apart from Rory, obviously, Henrik Stenson, someone who I did really like coming into the week, but he's suffering from the flu. He pulled out of Houston last week, so he's not quite in full health. We'll see how that affects him. But I think the one European name, which no one's mentioned, that could be a interesting outsider, is Paul Casey, who has shown a lot better form recently. He played reasonably well last week. He's played well in most of the season. His game's trending in the right direction, and he's a long hitter. And he may not win the tournament, but I think Paul Casey got quite a good showing this week. He's my one kind of outside European guy. But I think, generally speaking, look at Bubba Watson. Ultimately, as far as I'm concerned, Bubba Watson, if he plays reasonably well, Bubba Watson will be in there with a chance to win, because the golf course is so perfectly suited to him. You know, he hits that big, powerful... For him, it's a cut, and that goes right to left being a left-hander, and that's such a huge advantage, that big, powerful cut, and he has a real imagination as well. So I think Bubba, if he can keep his emotions in check in terms of being a defending champion, he's quite an emotional character. He didn't handle it very well two years ago, so we'll see how he gets on this year. But Bubba, I think, is perhaps a man to beat. Dustin Johnson as well hasn't ever really played well at Augusta National as such, but he hits the ball such a long way. I think he's a lot more... I think he's grown up a little bit in recent times for obvious reasons, and Dustin's someone who I don't think will win, but I think he can play quite well. But Bubba, for me, is a man to beat. Jordan Spieth's an interesting one, obviously, because he doesn't really fit in with the other guys as such, because he's not the longest of hitters. He's about 50th on the PGA Tour's driving distance rankings. And Jordan Spieth isn't actually the best iron player, even anywhere near it. He's probably the best scorer on tour. He finds a way to get it done. He's a fantastic putter, and he just has a real inner determination and steely nerve that can bridge the gap between him and the likes of Bubba Watson and Rory McIlroy. And you know, those guys may be more talented than Jordan Spieth, but Spieth probably has the better attitude, the better mentality, and that can count for a lot in a major championship. And Spieth, you know, I don't think he's going to win. But he could be up there. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in contention, certainly. He's someone who just finds a way to get it done. I look at guys who are outside that. Jason Day is the one that stands up to me. He's always someone who contends in the majors, has a game perfectly suited to it, but he's come close and missed out a few times. He came very close 2 years ago when Adam Scott won. Has he learned from those mistakes that he made in the back nines of those particular majors? If he has, then he has a very good chance to win. If not, then he will again finish fifth, and that will be it. So as for I've got an outsider for me, is Louis Westhuizen, who we've kind of forgotten all about him. He obviously lost to Bubba, was ridiculously unlucky in that Masters, Bubba hitting that shot in the 10th, the hooked wedge. You know, Louis must have thought he'd won the Masters at that point. And he's someone who is a game that's suited to the Augusta National. He's playing reasonably well. He's had a couple of top 10s this year, a couple of missed cuts as well. But if he finds his game, he's such a prodigious talent. You know, we saw it at St. Andrews obviously 5 years ago, where Louis isn't afraid to win these things, and he has the game, I think, perfectly suited to Augusta National. So as an outside bet, I would go for Louis Westhuizen to potentially contend, along with Paul Casey. But you know, you've got to look at Bubba as being the guy. He's the guy to beat. You know, it's his golf course, really. If he plays well, he'll be up there. If he doesn't play well, you know, even you know, he plays mediocre, he'll still be up there, because his game is so suited to that golf course. Can Rory McIlroy avoid that bad round and contend? You know, there's so many questions to this Masters tournament, so many guys you can mention, and Fred's right in saying that really, in my mind, there's only 20 guys that can win this event now. And with the golf course being soft, it will play even longer. But that in its own way will actually make the golf course easier, in the sense that if you hit the ball high and long, then you'll have an advantage, in the sense that the greens will be softer, more receptive, and that's obviously a very good thing, given how treacherous these greens always are. So I think there's so many, the obvious candidates are going to be the contenders this year, and one of them's going to win. I don't know which one it's going to be, but it's going to be fascinating to see it all unfold this weekend.
Man, you said almost everybody else as well. We'll see. Let me see what I can. Let me see if I can bring some sense here.
Just talk about Sergio.
I mentioned different guys, though. I didn't copy Fred completely. I mentioned Louis Westhuizen and Paul Casey, so come on.
Oh, yeah. That's,
you got Phil.
Right.
We got Phil left. We left you Phil.
Phil and Tiger.
And Sergio.
Phil and Tiger left.
Hey, but talking about Europeans first, Rory McIlroy, definitely he has to be in there. He's got he's going to be a contender. Whether he wins or not, I don't know. I think that, you know, that final round, 80, has left some mental scars with him since he blew up that infamous blowout in 2011. He's never quite convinced on that course that has teased him and against last year, you know. So I don't think, with all the things that's going on with Rory, I don't think this is his year. So I'm not going to pick him, but I think that he's going to be a factor. Henrik Stenson, wow, he has definitely wagered a losing battle with Augusta National over the years. And last year's T14 was his best finish in 9 attempts. At least his current form will fill him with confidence after a run of fourth, and second on the Florida swing. I think he's, you know, peaking at the right time. Sergio, my man, he hits it long and has as much short game magic as you could wish for, but Sergio's body of work here has to rank as disappointing. So my man, Sergio, no, I don't think he's going to make it. But hey, I'm going to pick somebody from the Europeans that's going to look good, and that's Lee Westwood. You know, this is a player who fancies himself to challenge Augusta National, rightfully so. Here's a stat for you guys. Westwood has finished higher than Rory in each of the last 5 Masters. Okay, so he's been in the top 10 finishing for the past years. So this is a guy that really likes to play here. He wants to win badly a major. So this is one of the Europeans that I would pick. And, hey, Paul Casey, you mentioned Kieran, and his game is a great fit for Augusta National. It showed with a 6 on his debut and 3 other top 20s in his next 4 starts. So I think he's another one that's going to do good. Bubba Watson, wow, he returns to defend his title and win his 3rd jacket in 4 years. It's hard to pick against him. He tamed this dangerous Amen corner last year by hitting a pitching wedge into the green for his 2nd shot in the par 5 13th. And, you know, even though Augusta has been lengthened a lot over the years, it gives power hitters like him an edge. Dustin Johnson, definitely. You have to pick the 2 guys that are the hottest right now, and I have to go with Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth. Johnson, like Watson, he's a monster hitter who can cut the corners there and Augusta challenging doglegs. And he's really also, you know, been very hot after his 6-month leave of absence. But I have to go with Jordan Spieth. Like Fred picked my pick there. But he's a machine right now. If you remember how good McIlroy was at the end of last year, he's inching close to that lofty form this season. And I remember when we talked about after he won in Australia, hey, Rory did it, and look what happened to him. Spieth is just doing just that, you know. The only thing that I would say, you know, in his last 3 starts, his notch a win, finished 2nd, and lost in a 3-man playoff last week. Fatigue could be an issue for him, but hey, he's only 21, so he's not us. I'm thinking about me. I would be fatigued in the first tournament. But anyway, others to watch, I have to say, like Kieran say, Louis Oosthuizen. Wow, he has the swing and the putting stroke to compete once again here. But a big if, he has looked healthy so far. If he's healthy, he can go there. Hideki Matsuyama, why am I going to leave him? You know, he's the Japanese Tiger. He won the Memorial last year, which is a carbon copy of Augusta. His swing tempo is amazing. His putting stroke is a thing of beauty. And Tiger Woods, is he going to win? No. Is he going to make the cut? Probably not. But, you know, I mentioned this is others to watch, so watch him most certainly. So my pick is Jordan Spieth to win. And I have, before I go back to Fred, you know, Rory McIlroy was the last player to win the week before a major. Before that was Phil Mickelson when he won the Scottish Open and then the Open, and before that Tiger Woods. So hey, that's large company to keep and some feat to accomplish. So we're looking all at you, J.B. Holmes. Watch out. So that's a large feat. And the par 3 champ has never won the Masters. So let's see who's going to win it. So, Fred, any final thoughts on the Masters before we move on to our final thoughts?
I do have a final thought. You know, you asked earlier, you know, why we love the Masters so much. And for me, with all those things, you know, the history and the traditions and the beauty. But I go back, you know, to the 60s, and you know, Jack Nicklaus won the Masters in 1965 with Arnold Palmer and Gary Player both tied for runner-up. Gary Player led the leaderboard on Thursday. Arnold led the leaderboard on Friday. Jack was at the top on Saturday. And then Jack ended up winning. It was the last time Byron Nelson made the cut in 1965. He finished T15. And Ben Hogan was in the field and finished T21. And that's the year that Jack's win inspired Augusta National co-founder Bobby Jones to utter, "He," meaning Nicklaus, "plays a game of which I am not familiar." You know, Bobby Jones' aura lingers over Augusta National. He, along with Dr. Alistair McKenzie, designed and built the golf course. It's a national treasure for sure. And this tournament every year, I look forward to it. As soon as it's over, I will be looking forward to next year's tournament. And I try and watch pretty much just about every minute between tape and live through the week. I don't miss very much of it. So I really, really enjoy it, guys.
And For me, four things I want to look out for this year's Masters. Who's going to be that first-round leader? You know, most of the field have earned their place at Augusta thanks to excellent play over the last year. But, you know, there's always that unlikely first-round leader. So I want to see who's going to be there. Who's going to be that veteran that's going to show up? Freddie Couples, like you mentioned, you know, Jose Maria Olazabal, Lee Jing, Pernell Langer. Who's going to be? Who's going to be the one? Also, the amateurs, who's going to be making its way there? This, you know, Matias Dominguez, who won the inaugural Latin American Amateur Championship. Watch out. He looks to have a great short game, and that is, of course, vitally important here. And the classic pin positions definitely is always a must to watch where the pin positions are going to be each of the four rounds. So, Kieran, what are your final thoughts on the Masters?
Well, I concur with everything you say there, the two of you, and your Fred said there Augusta National and the Masters is a national treasure. I would go further and say it's an international treasure. You know, the event is so beloved all over the world, and as much as I love it, as much as anyone, and it really inspired me in golf when I was a really small child watching the Masters with my grandfather. I was only 4 or 5 years old. When it finishes, as much as I've loved it, I also have a sad feeling when it's over, because you have to wait another year until it's going to be back. And that's a sign of something great. The Masters is truly great. And you mentioned there Jordan Spieth, and one last thing would be, how fitting would it be that in Ben Crenshaw's last Masters, a fellow Texan in Jordan Spieth won at Augusta? That would be a storybook ending if there ever was one.
Oh, definitely would be, and would be maybe storybook ending for him that way. Hey, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have some final thoughts before we go. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our final thoughts. Final thoughts. So, Kieran, I believe you have something to tell us about Mark Leishman and Tim Clark.
Yeah, Carl, somewhat sad and unfortunate news here, and you may have seen this in the last week or so, but Mark Leishman's wife, Audrey, took very ill and was placed in an induced coma, and she'd felt she was battling the flu, and she was actually suffering from pneumonia, which obviously is extremely serious and can be life-threatening, and she was taken to hospital. And thankfully, our conditions improved, I believe. But obviously, understandably, you know, that placed Mark Leishman, who is in the Masters this week, it placed his participation in doubt. And as you will remember, he came very close to winning 2 years ago when his compatriot Adam Scott triumphed. But as I say, thankfully, his wife's condition has seemed to have improved, and she's getting better. And Mark is scheduled to tee off on Thursday morning alongside former champion Ian Woosnam and Eric Compton. I've got to say, Eric Compton is a great story. You know, his extraordinary life, and he's finally got to Augusta. That's one of the kind of underappreciated stories this week for me, is and Eric Compton, how special is that he's going to be playing at Augusta. But yes, Mark Leishman, his wife, feeling a lot better, and hopefully she'll be back to full health soon. And Mark, I hope he has a good week at Augusta. But one man who will not be at Augusta is Tim Clark, who is struggling with an elbow problem, has been for some time. South African, who of course finished second to Phil Mickelson 9 years ago, he hasn't played since the Sony Open back in January. And while his elbow has improved significantly, apparently, according to his agent, he hasn't been able to prepare adequately for the tournament and has consequently had to forego his invitation, unfortunately. So hopefully we'll see Tim Clark back next year at Augusta, and hopefully we'll see Mark Leishman have a good week and better things to come for him. And but Carlos, I know you have some... I had some sad news. It's quite a downbeat note to end the show on, but I had some sad news there, and Carlos, you have some sad news as well.
Very sad. I mean, a divorce is never bad. It's never a good thing. And after 3 years of marriage, social media darling Amanda Duffner and pro golfer Jason Duffner has called it quits. According to court documents, the couple filed their divorce last March 16th, but they had already been separated since February 17th. The Duffner divorce is still pending approval, but it's expected to be finalized by April this year. The two did not make any public comments about the issue, and many are speculating about what caused the split. No clear reasons were revealed, but their statement indicated that there had been an irretrievable breakdown of marriage and a complete incompatibility of temperament that parties can no longer live together. You know, a sad ending for a fairy tale avidly followed by the couple's social media followers, but Amanda will be back in the market as a sizzling hot millionaire. You know, the settlement terms guarantee that she will be coming out of the divorce with $2.5 million. Jason, on the other hand, will be able to retain ownership of their two homes, which both are located in Auburn, Alabama. So, you know, she's going to have some millions. She's going to be in the market. And Jason, I think he can win a major. You know, remember when Rory last year, he split with Caroline, and look what happened? Hey, look out. Maybe he can win this weekend and go on to bigger things. But no, seriously speaking, divorce is never a good thing. So, and they really made a great couple. So, and that Duffnering meme from him is really epic. Hey, Fred, any final thoughts before we close the show this week?
Yeah, real quick, last a couple things. Dick's Sporting Goods is donating up to $1 million to the First Tee. They're basing it off of $5 from the sale of each driver sold in April. So if you're thinking about buying a new driver, go down to Dick's and buy it. $5 from the purchase will go to First Tee. I don't know if you guys saw it. We're talking about commercials. Rory and Tiger filmed a great commercial for Nike. Really good stuff. You get a chance to watch that. Really good one. There's a fantastic piece about Melissa Reed. We haven't seen a lot about her on the LPGA Tour. She was a hot young player out of England. And LeWine Meyer did a great article on her in the Global Golf Post this week. And the Drive, Chip, and Putt was Sunday at Augusta National. And the kids had a great time. I don't know if anybody watched it on the TV on Sunday, but that's always a great event. Kudos to USGA, the Masters, and the PGA for putting on the Drive, Chip, and Putt. And, Carlos, I think that's about everything that I have for tonight.
Well, Back Niner fans, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf, and thank you for listening to us for the past 90 minutes as we brought you the big preview of the Masters 2015. Special thanks to you, Kieran Clark, for being such a great guest to us, special guest co-host today. You always bring your great knowledge. It's a great insight and great, very entertaining to always have you here on the show. Fans, don't forget to join us again next Tuesday as it's going to be our 100th show and there's going to be some giveaways. Make sure you go to Twitter, follow our ID, Back9Report, with the number 9 in the middle to find out. Register. It's not too late. Register for that giveaway. We're going to be saying it out first thing when we start our 100th show next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Also, you can find us on TuneIn or download our show on iTunes. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader and Kieran Clark, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Remember that there's never a boring week in golf, and another exciting weekend with the Master is upon us. Make sure you don't miss the action. When you least expect it, history can be made. Memorable moments are forged. So, happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.